will overestimate what you will do in 1 year, and you'll always underestimate what God will do in 10. But just even my view of time is an ingredient of spiritual formation, and giving myself time and giving others time and pastoring and recognizing that God does his best work in time and over time and usually over longer periods of time. I love the idea of time and spiritual formation.
Well, here we are with Tyler Cherneski. He is the lead pastor and co-planter, right? That's correct?
Yeah, co-lead pastor. Yeah.
Co-lead pastor. Very, very 2021 of you to do.
Oh, we're so relevant.
But Tyler and his team, Planted City Church, OTR, it is in Cincinnati. If you are a Mosaic person, if you're a part of our church, you've seen Tyler before. He's come and preached at Mosaic, done a Q&A. It was tremendous, really helpful for our community. But Tyler is someone that I've heard about, but never really gotten to talk to. And he and I are both major fans of a Dutch priest, Henry Nouwen, that you've heard me talk about. And he's just a guy that I think is incredibly sharp, and even more so, I love people who are thoughtful in the way they follow Jesus instead of just being reactionary to things that are given to them. And Tyler embodies that really well. So Tyler, super excited to have you on the White Flag podcast. Thanks for joining us and really making the time and even repping the Mosaic t-shirt as you come on.
I know. I wish everyone could see this sweet gift y'all gave me. I thought I'd know exactly what to wear today.
So. Perfect. Does Ohio have any strange preoccupations with its state flag like Maryland does?
I don't think so. I was surprised when I got this. There were socks with the flag. There was this shirt with the flag. It was new to me. I had to look up what the symbol was.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's very polarizing. Most people love it or think, well, this is hideous. Why do people like it?
But yeah, yeah.
So I know that you're a huge fan of Ken Burns documentaries. And you are a fan of Broadway. My sister, my baby sister works for Broadway.com. She's in New York.
No way.
So after we're done, I'll have to give you a plug and get you hooked up a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
But I know in addition to your passions, there's a studious nature to your faith. And even scholarly is a word that I wouldn't use because it makes it feel like performative. But I know that you you have a passion for like that rich thoughtfulness and faith with even some of the authors that you follow and listen to and who shape even your faith. So can you walk me through a little bit of your journey to some of these thinkers like Henry Nouwen or Robert Seurat or some others that you know that just kind of like sort of dropped those seeds of just some of these practices of surrender that we talked about on the show? Like, what was your journey to get there?
Yeah, well, in one sense, once a nerd, always a nerd. So when asked to describe my style at one point, I said nerd chic is the best we could come up with. So it's what I'm going for in life to try to bring back the life of the mind. You know, it's a great life. But more broadly, when it's been some of these authors, I think I was probably most drawn to old writers, mainly because of how unhurried they seemed. Or how the facts that what concerned them or the issues they were writing to weren't my immediate issues. Like, it's not like they were writing a book about a pandemic, you know, they're writing up to their times, to their audiences. And something about that could just take me even out of my own present moment to think, yeah, more deeply and critically just about whatever practice they were describing or a way of life they were describing. So, man, I mean, when it was, whether it's Henry Nouwen or if I'm thinking other contemplative folks that I just really enjoy, it was this like, you just feel how quiet they are even in their writing. The books move kind of slow and it feels like in one sense, they wouldn't understand our world at all. And yet they totally understand everything about our world. Yeah. I don't know how else to describe that quality, but it's like, you don't know what TikTok is, but you also know a lot about being a human. And that, whatever that was just such an attractive quality.
Yeah. There's something about those authors you hit on that I haven't thought about, but like, it almost demands that you read slowly and take breaths in between like sentences. It's like, you have to metabolize what you're reading instead of just plowing through it like I tend to try to do so I can finish the book and mark it
well,
off.
Well, and I've learned to write, and you're probably the same way, Jonathan, just, you know, me having read or heard some of your stuff, it's like, I got the short, punchy sentences, you know, memorable is portable. Is this a, you know, a tweetable line? And there's something about some of these writers or these people that is just resistant to all that. I mean, it can make it both hard to find quotes sometime in their book, like if you're looking for a good Instagram caption, but it also is what makes their way of thinking and their way of living so attractive. Like it is, it's thorough and it's comprehensive in ways that I don't always see. And it's not knocking other modern authors or other pastors, but it's just something's changed and we kind of write and think differently now. And it's nice to pull out of that and enter another space.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think, when it comes to, like, I've read some of the work of these men and women before, and it didn't resonate with me because, like, my soul wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting with a good friend who I'll have on the show later. She introduced me to work by Ruth Haley Barton, and I remember finding it in my journal from 2016, and they talked about, like, how I needed to sit and be silent for a while and, like, fast from speaking for a day or something. I never did it. Because my soul wasn't ready for it. Like there, the soil wasn't in the right season. And I'm not saying that like God is providential in all things, even when my brokenness is a thing that gets in the way. Mm. But sometimes people will read things and then come back to it and their heart's in a different place and it resonates with them. So with that being said, one of the lines that stuck out to me in an interview John Mark Comer had with Tyler Staton was like, the beginning of a true walk with Jesus is when you come to the end of yourself. Did you have a season or a moment when you kind of did come to the end of yourself and realize that the true Christian walk is actually falling into the arms of the Father and not trying to work your way towards him?
Yes. So the pause there is only because I just felt myself going back there emotionally. I think there's been many end of yourself moments. I mean, some end of myself moments in my life have been like, gosh, there needs to be a big, you know, repentance as it classically is defined. There's some bad habits. There's some ways of living that need to be cut off. But the one that came to mind, even as you were talking, and as I'm thinking about the conversation we've already had, was when I was in Kansas City. So I, you know, left undergrad, I left seminary. I go to Kansas City for this pastoral residency program that is intended to be, and they sell it kind of this way, a place to learn the rhythms of pastoral ministry so that you don't burn out fast. And yet when I get there, you know, you bring all of who you are with you. And so it's like, yeah, I know this is about rhythms and resting and spiritual disciplines and all this stuff, but it's like, I just want to work really hard and be like the best resident, you know? And so that's very much my MO. That is how I've made my way through life. And yet there, maybe midway through, I can remember a great conversation with Tom. So Tom's the kind of founding pastor of Christ Community, this place that does the residency church. I love, one of the healthiest environments I've ever been in. And Tom, I forget what we were talking about that started it, but at one point he just kind of says, he's like, there's no greater joy in life than being desired, and God desires you. And that was one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, thinking about desire, and I have a complex relationship with desire, because even when I was at Mosaic, we talked about same-sex attraction and being a gay person, following Jesus and all that. So it's like desire is a loaded word in many ways, but thinking about desire. Oh, there's total baggage, but there's no greater joy in life than being desired. Yeah. God desires you. Okay. And letting that be a new starting point for Christian life, where it's like, hey, what makes this faith unique? What makes following Jesus unique? Isn't that it's costly at times. Other faiths have costly parts to them. It isn't that there's sacrifice involved. You know, you can find other worldviews with sacrifice, but it's like, man, this just announcement of God's desire to be with me and his delight in me. And that more than anything else, I think has fueled a desire to, okay, I should like slow down and experience time with this God. I should set aside time and hear from God. I should pray differently. I mean, all the practices that have flown since then, I think were rooted in just that turnaround of like, oh yeah, it does feel good to be desired. Right. Again, it's why everyone posts what pictures they do on the internet. It feels great to be desired. And yet God, the profound truth at the heart of the Christian faith, like God desires you. That really was sort of that moment that I think pulled me out of kind of a big, okay, you know, performance is what is going to get people to love me. Excelling's going to get people to love me and a little bit more in demand. At the end of the day, that doesn't matter. God desires me. This is something worth, you know, exploring more or diving into more deeply.
What I hope people get out of that is not just the richness of what you shared, but the fact that that revelation came after you finished seminary.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Like, I mean, my seminary study average, Donovan, that's like a worst, terrible spiritual disciplines place.
Yeah. I just think it's important that we cannot over spiritualize just that practice of listening to the Father, but we over spiritualize the academic pursuit of the Father, like seminary. And it is important. It's a necessary thing. I believe, you know, I went to seminary myself in order to be trustworthy with the scriptures and with the burden that God had put on me. But both you and I, our story of like falling back into the Father and finding rest with him, it's fascinating that like they both occurred after we graduated and became professionals.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for people to know that, you know, the benchmarks that we put up, Henry Nouwen calls them the grade givers that we set for ourselves. Those things will oftentimes, like, virtuous at first, but become problematic later. That just stuck out to me that, like, you know, the projection I make on you is, man, Tyler, he's so smart. He's academic. He's been like this since he was 12, you know? And it's like, no, he's a normal person just like me. And he had to almost have some, I tried to stay away from the word deconstruction because it's kind of loaded in our Christian context right now. But there is a deconstructing there of, oh, I am not what I do for the Father. I am not what I do for others to think I am spiritual. It's like, it's what you said, delight. I heard someone say, delighting in the Lord is looking at him, looking at you. And when they first said that, I like, okay, no one needs to talk for 10 minutes. Like, I need to just sit and think about that. But that's really, yeah, I love that you said too, man, that's like one of the healthiest organizations you've ever been a part of. Cause like, I'd hope that'd be the case.
I couldn't find any, like, I love Christ Community, and the residency was everything it needed to be, especially by the end of my time there. And I think, I mean, some of the great lessons, even when I think about the spiritual life, I mean, it starts with that, you know, so that was a total Tom thing. Like, hey, there's no greater joy than being desired. God desires you. But another thing Tom said a million times that has profoundly shaped kind of my spiritual journey. And I know that he was, you know, he'd probably say he was virtually discipled by Dallas Willard. So that was a dense Willard, slow, steady spirituality book. So we loved, you know, St. Dallas of Christ Community. But Tom would also say again and again, and I repeat it, I mean, again and again at our little church that's just growing now here in Cincinnati. But it's you will overestimate what you will do in 1 year, and you'll always underestimate what God will do in 10. And we just time and time again, it's just like, man, Tyler, like, you know, here's my great spiritual goals for the year, or here's what we're doing, you know, this, our downtown campus for this year. I mean, every year. And it's just like, man, probably biting off more than I can chew. That's not healthy. I am overestimating what I think I can do with my own effort. And yet always, always downplaying what God will do faithfully, slowly, piece by piece over time. And I do think that's to humble us, that's to grow our dependence on him. But just even my view of time is an ingredient of spiritual formation, and giving myself time and giving others time and pastoring and recognizing that God does his best work in time and over time, and usually over longer periods of time than if I would make the plan. I mean, if I'm thinking other legacy from Christ Community, but other thing that's been so helpful in kind of this spiritual journey is just the ability to not just slow down and spend long periods of time with the Father, but recognize, man, this thing that I'd love to be gone tomorrow, like, will be gone one day, probably not tomorrow. And there's probably something along the way, you know, there's ways God wants to grow and teach me. I mean, I love the idea of time and spiritual formation.
Well, you're hitting on something that I'm still studying a little bit, but I was analyzing like literary tools in the New Testament, because Paul was a genius, obviously. So even like the structure of a chiasm and how he used that in his list, or even the way in which the Greeks would, if he made a list in writing, whatever comes first is usually of paramount importance. So knowing that, I looked at 1 Corinthians 13 differently, that love is patient is first.
Okay.
I was like, holy, like patience is first when we're outlining, you know, if I'm right in this, and if this is true, what I was reading, that the patience is one of the most important elements of love, then in order for me to love the Father, out of this patience he's had for me and coming around to repentance and how patient he was with me, that like, I cannot be loving God if I am not patient for him to operate at his pace. So even as you're speaking, I'm being challenged to remember like, okay, I have to be, if I'm loving the Father, if I'm loving Christ, I'm being patient with him. One, because he doesn't owe me anything. But two, if I'm trying to hurry up or expedite my transformation, I'm actually not loving God. So that was just in my head as you're talking, but that's a new concept for me. Like I haven't done anything on the show yet about that, because I'm like, I'm still wrestling with that, but you already brought it up.
Well, I think about whether it's the great spiritual mentors in my life, even personally now. So these aren't authors, but it's like, who's walked with me through the grittiest times in life? And what do I value the most? And it would be patience. It was slow and steady. And I think a way that too often folks in our line of work can really hurt some folks or cause great pain is to have a 5-month conversation, 5 minutes into knowing someone, or a 5-year. And I say all that to say, sometimes it's like there's understanding that you gain over time. There's trust that you gain over time. And of course, the ultimate example and the best shepherd is Jesus, who's known us from the very beginning, has all the context and is going to bring up pivotal moments as we need them. I mean, that's why he's just so brilliant as a rabbi and a teacher. And then as a shepherd, he's leading us along, like he's the best. But even in like our human world, if I'm like, man, these people, I mean, Tom, who I've already mentioned at Christ Community, or anyone there, Christ, but it's just like, you get it. You know how much time you have. You can tell what I'm like. You've seen me at work. And there's just some really clear moments and some really good conversations that stick with you. And what is it? The Gen Z says it hits different. I'm trying so hard. No, but
Gen Z. It's like, all right, we're dating ourselves.
Gotcha. But it's true. And you hear someone that knows you say something true about you at the right time. That's what propels spiritual growth forward. Of course, Jesus does that the best. And that's why we want to spend time with him. He knows exactly what we need to hear at every moment. But we also can know it's true in other human leaders that we have, when it's like, wow, you've thought through this, you've walked with me, and here's a word I'm ready to receive. And now I'm ready to move forward with, you know?
Yeah. And you're right. The people who you turn to really develop you are the ones who've stuck with you when you didn't think you deserved to be stuck with, you know, like the people who are, you've fallen and tripped again, and they're like, come on, let's keep going. That's great. That's great. So, one thing I like asking people who I want to learn from in this is, walk me through the first 90 minutes of your day. Let's be clear. Whatever Tyler shares next doesn't mean he does it every single day without flaw and is perfect, but what's like your rhythm or your routine, or what's the stated goal you have for what that first 90 minutes of your day will look like? I'm assuming and judging that God is, and time with him is somewhere incorporated in that. But I'm trying to help people get practical ideas on how to start their day, because most people are reactive to the most important part of their day. Like, real quick, the American like food lobbyists made us think you have to have the breakfast be the best meal of the day. And that was largely like a capitalistic move. And we've learned over time, like intermittent fasting is good. Some people don't lose weight if they don't eat till lunch. So I'm not anti-breakfast, but I think we got it backwards. Breakfast wasn't the most important meal of the day, but it was the most important time of the day when it comes to our spiritual walk. So that's why I'm asking this question of, you know, what's the first 90 minutes of your day like? Because I want to get a tap into your brain so that me and others could be like, okay, there's something from here that I could steal, or he's helping me reframe the way I fight the temptation to grab my phone and look at the news and read about sports instead of like resting with God and leaning into him, or even leaning into others. So super long way of asking, what's the first 90 minutes?
No, I love it. Well, and I'm trying to think, when you said practical, this is what came to mind. So what's true is I'm a very early riser, And in some ways, I've always been that way. I'm just kind of like, I mean, every time I go to a coffee shop, I joke and say, like, I wake up like this, but still give me more. But it's just like, I don't need your caffeine. And yet, the reason I say rise early is, I know we were chatting before we came on. Even though I am single, I live with a family now. And one of the things I've realized is that once people are up in the house, it's just harder to have some of the slow, quiet time that I need. So I'll describe what I do. But one of the things that's propelled, if I'm thinking practical, propelled me, like, let me just aim before anyone else is up. Yeah. And while it feels like Cincinnati's still asleep and no one's, especially maybe in our line of work, although I can imagine it's so true in so many callings in people's different vocations, it's like the emails will start, the texts will come in, someone needs something. If you can beat all that by just getting up early, 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 I mean, I'd say that's the first step towards kind of my morning and something that's made a huge difference recently. It's like, I've got to get up before there's other demands and things coming in. Once I am awake and it's still dark outside and, you know, the children all nestled, all snug in their beds. Yeah. There is a good time for me of just kind of a slow thinking. I don't try to read a whole lot anymore or get new content. And I say anymore, I mean, maybe this is one of those things that's unique with having been in a seminary setting or something, but it's, and to be clear, what I'm about to say, there is always more to learn from the Bible, but I need to read this many verses and then have this kind of reflection. It's just like, for me, when I get into that headspace with as much study as I have done, I can kind of do what you say. I can trick myself into morning academic study instead of morning time with the Lord. Mm-hmm. So a verse is great. An idea is great. You know, kindness is an idea, or patience. You just said love, joy, peace, patience. You know, and all that, you know, a recent scripture about Jesus. So recently we just did, we're walking through Acts in our church sermon series. So there's been stuff from Acts that's on my mind, but it's like, okay, I don't need to restudy. I don't need to leave with five takeaways. What's a thing to think about, a thing to pray about? And I try to spend more time just, I don't know, talking to the Lord in those moments. I journal pretty regularly. And a lot of that is kind of a thoughts feeling thing. I know I've mentioned being such an achiever, but if you're into the Enneagram cult, I'm a number three. Yeah. And us threes have many, many strengths. A great weakness is usually an inability to recognize what's truly going on the inside. In other words, if things look great on the outside or we're achieving on the outside, then we're fine, right? We must be fine. So it's a combination in the morning of, can I wake up early? Can there be some kind of engagement with God that's not trying to do too much? I'm not trying to read or learn. I'm just wanting to be. Let me feel where I'm actually feeling. How am I entering into this day? Am I excited for it? Am I loathing something? Am I feeling guilty about something else? And then I really do, and this is another Christ community legacy, but it was a church that was so focused on the faith and work conversation is one way to talk about it. So the fact that we all have
vocational discipleship.
Yeah. We all have vocations. We all have callings. We all have responsibilities in the day. And that our work isn't just about compensation. It's our contribution. So probably the last thing every day in that morning time is thinking like, man, what's the like one thing today for someone else, the work you have for me, God, is there, I mean, you could really lean into an over-realized view of Ephesians 4, but just like, what's the work you prepared for me in advance today? Sure. But the idea just being like, I want that morning space to be both a space for like me and the Lord, and we're reflecting and I'm growing and I'm getting in touch with me. But I never want to forget that a lot of spiritual growth is things we either do for others or ways we serve for others or surrender our agendas. Or my spiritual growth isn't just about having a deeper self-awareness. It's also about having a larger neighbor awareness. And so that last bit is kind of critical. And sometimes it's just real simple. It's like, oh, before I start today, I need to like write that thank you card that I've been putting off, or I'm going to text this person this morning, or here's something to pray for. Or honestly, that meeting that was already on the calendar, but now I know that's my most important meeting of the day. So I'm going to put some more thought into that. And that's now what I'll think about in the shower a little longer. I don't know, but just like, but that, whatever it is that pivots my mind, both towards God, yeah, into myself, but then also a little bit outward before the day even starts, and not to everyone, and not to create a new to-do list. It really is just one thing. Like, what's this important thing today that has to happen for someone else and for my good and for me to grow and be drawn closer to, you know, living how Jesus would live. That's kind of the broad map of the morning that, again, takes place before, I don't know, before people are walking down the city sidewalks, you know?
Yeah. I love the emphasis of, like, I'm reorienting my spirit toward God for the purpose of living the rest of the day in commune with him, but for his purposes. It's not, I'm going to go fill up and then, like, be in a cocoon all day and keep it all to myself. Like, there's a purpose to it. That's why we like talking about, like, living out of the overflow of your walk with God. Your life should be under that banner. But that last little part about vocational discipleship, I think, is huge. And I definitely at times want every quiet time to be like the best quiet time. And then it guarantees it's going to be a bad quiet time because you're so focused on the other stuff. But
Willard always talked about, even the classic disciplines, there's some disciplines of withdrawal, there's some disciplines of engagement. And I just think, again, in the kind of my journey in the spiritual life piece, and it's just popular right now, self-care is a hit. And it's good. I love self-care. I got a massage scheduled for next Wednesday. You know what I mean? So it's like, you, self-care isn't a thing. Thank you. So it's like, good, self-care isn't bad. You know, I am not saying that, but it's just like, let's be aware enough to realize that the rise of self-care has simultaneously occurred with the rise of individualism. And I don't think that's a coincidence. And so it's like, of course, I want my faith to shape how I understand myself. And am I in touch? And do I recognize what the Father says about me? I mean, all those things, yes. And I don't want to forget the invitation to pick up my cross and love my neighbor as myself, and recognize that there's a costly, others-oriented disposition to the Christian life. And so trying to get kind of that both and in a morning where it's like, yes, withdraw and refresh and plumb the depths of my soul and search me, O Lord, and know my heart. And then, like, now put my hands to work kind of deal, you know? And I'm wanting to have a bit of both.
Man, that's tremendous. And I have probably a disproportionate frustration with, like, self-help, self-care industries, because I think it's so important. And it's so much like evil in the world. It's to get as close as it can to what Jesus desires for us, but then to make a shift. And as you know, so much of self-care is self-worship and this, the rise of the individual. And so, you know, I'm going to take care of myself because I deserve this. And the Christian pursuit of self-care is, I want to be a better vessel for the kingdom of God. And part of this rest with him is, like, I become more aware of how crappy I am. That doesn't elevate me. It elevates the cross. And then my worthiness is elevated because I don't even deserve this gift, but I get it. And I walk more confidently. And it's not like penance, you know, like, I'm not going to go with God to beat myself up. But like, it is important for people to know, like, when Jesus said, pick up your cross, he didn't mean, like, kill yourself and burn yourself out. You know, there was something else there, and we get that wrong. For those who are listening, I want to be clear. There are three things I want to point out from Tyler's morning time. Tyler, I think, is really fascinating. One is, it's interactive free, meaning, like, it's just you. And people can do that at any time of the day, but they need to have interactive free time. It's agenda free. So you don't step into it with, I got to do this, I got to do this. Because, like, I have a love-hate relationship with YouVersion devotional plans because I think it feels like an agenda a little bit. But then three, you audit your emotional state. And that's something that actually I do that we'll do a podcast episode about later. But I think if the three key ingredients you want to take away to replicate what Tyler does, you know, it's agenda free, it's interaction free, and he audits. So those are all kind of A words a little bit. Audits his emotional state. If you are able to pick that up and just give that a shot in the next week, regardless of, like, what you're reading, I guarantee it would be productive for you. In seasons, I've seen each of these things be true for me. But I wanted to extract that brilliance out of what you shared, because you kind of walked us through it. But I'm like, oh, those are some quick hit applications that people could embrace, because I thought that was so great. The emotional one especially. I love that.
But think about what you're saying. So it's like, it's agenda free. We're tuning into emotions. It's like, isn't that what you want to do with, like, your best friend? And I really do think that Jesus, and I will not cry on the podcast. Don't look at me. I might cry if you look at me. No, but isn't it just Jesus, like, you know, or wouldn't you want Jesus to be your best friend? And isn't that the invitation that I think he does extend? And we can't forget, I mean, friendship with God is a huge category in scripture. And the idea that there is someone that's going to walk with you in the highs and the lows, will be there in the good and the bad, when there's pain, when there's stuff to celebrate, when there's correction that needs to happen. And so what you're describing, that kind of like, the main thing that matters is we have the time together, and you know that you've got a really good friend who's going to care for you, and you can bring your real self to your friend. And I, anyway, just as you were describing those three things, that made me think like, yeah, that's kind of what it feels like to me as a template for friendship with, again, I think a real friend who's who is there and wants to be our friend. I mean, God befriending humanity is how some, I mean, big, broad theologians that are really more academic than both of us would describe the, you know, the message of the Bible. So it's like, I don't think we're going out on a weird limb by saying like there's a key friendship component to scripture or to Jesus's teaching. And it's like, and that's one of the things maybe I see myself doing in those mornings now is like, yeah, that's just like some hangout time with a real good friend.
Yeah. Because when you, if you're meeting with someone who's not a friend, it's a work meeting.
Yeah.
But when you're meeting up for a beer or for coffee and there's nothing, no agenda, that's how you know it's like a friend.
Yeah.
And even the language you're saying, like, it's totally biblical, because Moses, when he's coming down off the mountain, I wish I was brilliant enough to know the reference, but like, it says like, I am a friend of the Lord.
Like, yeah.
In restoring,
describing the tabernacle, face to face as one meets with a friend,
and it's like, oh, Moses had that. And I remember I lived at a monastery for 4 days last fall, and you know, vow of silence to go in, no one interacts with you, it's just you. And I came back and I was home, and my kids went to sleep, my wife went out to small group, and I like literally poured myself some bourbon and went on the patio, and I just like sat there with him. And it was like maybe the first time in my life where I felt like God and I are friends. And it only came after 4 straight days of having no one but him. And even in the mornings when I'm quiet, I know that I'm not at that place right now. Like, I would be tempted right now to go out, drink some bourbon, and like have my phone or read a book and distract myself. But the morning quiet time does remind me like that is possible. He is there to do that. And he's not changing. I'm the one that's changing. Like, I'm the one that needs to be cognizant of the relationship status. If it were up to him, would always say friend, but I'm the one that's maybe flexing in and out of that state, not because of sin or because he changes how he views us, but just like, I'm not making that quiet rhythm to be with him. So I haven't really shared with people about that moment, but when you said friend, I was like, I remember thinking cognitively, like, oh, like God is my best friend right now.
Right.
I was going through some pain, and there were some things I was processing individually about my past. So that kind of made it, it's easy to, desperation is a beautiful thing with the Lord. I sometimes desire the fruit of desperation without the season of desperation. Yeah. And I'm coming to grips with that right now, because I'm not in a place of feeling desperate, but I'm like, well, I kind of want the intimacy with him that I get when I feel desperate, but I don't want to be desperate. And I don't know what to, that's a paradox I'm navigating.
Well, and it just, Tyler, real quick, your story makes me.
Tyler, I lost my feed real quick. Do you see me?
I don't see your video.
Yep. Let me pause. I'm going to turn my camera off.
Yeah, go for it.
I think this happened once before. See if this works. All right. This happened to me. Can you mind sitting tight for like a minute? All right, there we go.
Yeah.
All right. It kind of worked out perfectly. It cut right when we finished.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that we don't screw up. So let's just pick up where you left off, big guy.
Well, your story reminds me of a sweet time I had in Chicago. I was there for, I think, an evening chapel service the night before. I was there a Sunday evening, wasn't flying back to Kansas City till a Monday afternoon. And so in some sense, it's like, what do you do on this random Monday morning by yourself? And one of my favorite places in all the world, there's this outdoor theater pavilion thing in Chicago, the Pritzker Pavilion. It's right down in Millennium Park.
Is that right by the Bean?
It's right by the Bean. And just the theater kid in me, I don't know, all that like metal, and it's a big stagey kind of park, and you're just like, this is so cool. But that was one, just even when you're talking about, yeah, the sipping bourbon outside at night with Jesus, that was one where it's like, you know, I think we're just going to go on a walk this morning. And, you know, you tell some friends experiences like this, and they're just like, sounds like you had a great time with your imaginary friend, bro. You know, like, and that's fine. I'm okay if people think it's a bit nuts, but there was something dynamic and, I don't know, beautiful about that morning where it's like, man, here we are in a city full of folks. And right now it's just me and you, Lord. And similarly, there was stuff going on in my life, but it's like, we get a chance to walk through a park. I can talk about it all morning. We don't have to be to the airport until lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And again, that sort of unstructured time with a friend, what could have been, you know, let me pound out some emails and I'm going to swing on over to Caribou or probably Intelligentsia if you're in Chicago. Sorry, Chicago friends.
I know exactly what Caribou you're talking about. My wife and I there.
But it's just, you know, so there's a way you can fill it up. There's another way in which it's like, man, this unexpected or not unexpected, but just this time alone, I didn't anticipate. It's like, oh yeah, of course I didn't make plans for that morning. What now? It's like, you can hang out with Jesus and have some extended time together. And if I'm thinking just incredible soul work or moments of insight or just encouragement, kind of like with a friend, you know, you leave feeling lighter and a little more ready to get back to someplace where there is other responsibility. I mean, just beautiful moments that come from sort of that time together and that awareness, like you said, that it's just like, even in Chicago, even in your backyard, you know, Jesus is ready to hang.
So here's a question that is not like, man, I hope this leads to a great convo. Like, I genuinely don't know the answer. When someone gets thinking about their most transformative moments with God, almost universally, they are removed from a clock. There's no environment. I'm just going to keep going until I can fix this thing. Okay. There's almost no environment where someone has a transforming experience with Jesus, but there's a clock or a deadline or they have to jump to their next thing. And I think about retreats. I think about sabbaticals. I think about stepping into new things with God. And, you know, the tension I feel is if it's so rare for someone in our modern world to have a clockless existence as a part of their life, you know, like to say, I have so much margin that I can be disconnected from what's next so I can be fully present. But almost all of the major moments in life, when you really are like, with God in your hurt or in your pain or in your uncertainty, it works because you've thrown the clock out the window and you're just trying to survive or you're just trying to connect with them. And the thing I don't have an answer to yet is, you know, how do we help people build margin so that they can like step into this space? Because I don't really believe that God operates on a clock. I don't like making big statements about God that aren't really explicitly written in scripture, but I kind of think like the moment you put God on the clock is the moment he goes, okay, I'm not going to do it. So what do you think about that? Like that the necessity of margin, and how do we in our hurried, increasingly post-Christian, not just hostile towards the teachings of Jesus, but to the lifestyle he modeled, our world is hostile to that and its pace and its volume. How can people build enough margin to even like hear the whispers of God in our hurried culture?
A few thoughts come to mind. One is this. I was talking about time with an artist friend of mine. She did a great whole exhibition around time and secrets and the span of a human life and all this different things. It was brilliant. We had an art gallery at our church in Kansas City, so got to meet a lot of artists. Kelly's one of the smartest ones. But one of the things I remember us chatting about when we were together was how this, you know, there's so many things that humans have had conquest over. So now we're masters of the earth. We can, you know, drill a tunnel through a mountain, you know, I mean, all this kind of stuff like, oh, that mountain can't stand our way anymore. We're master of that. But it led to a thing of like, oh man, kind of the last frontier is like, we're masters of time now. And we can tell time what to do. And we leverage our time and we buy our time. And we're, you know, so even when you're saying folks glued to their phone, glued to the clock, if I think about it in those terms of like, oh, this is another way to be in control. This is another way to satisfy whatever that thing is in me that wants to be in charge of my world and in charge of the world, if given a chance, right? Yeah. That is, it's like, man, something about time and having such a full schedule and slotting this here and hacking this there. And if I, you know, squeeze this between those things, now I'm maximizing my day. Just naming that there's an impulse there, I think, that's a little bit of an impulse towards being in charge, towards being like God. that I didn't often think about before that conversation with Kelly, where it's like, oh yeah, part of hacking time isn't just how to be, quote, more productive, but it really is a way to gain control in terms of how to help people buy or find margin. Yeah. I'm thinking that it probably is something, again, that if you're going to try to schedule, you know, and here's my margin comes between 3 and 5 p.m. on a Friday afternoon. It also doesn't feel like that'll work out very well, just because, you know, it's scheduled, you know, it's there, you're tempted to cheat on it. You started early. So the first thing that came to mind, and it's a harder answer in many ways, but it probably is more of a lifestyle of having less to do and being more thoughtful ahead of time about how many big commitments or recurring commitments we say yes to. So the thing that's probably swaying my answer there is just this last week, you know, we mentioned at the beginning, we got a co-pastor model at City Church. We also believe in rest. So my co-pastor, Chris, is away right now on vacation, which is great. And I want the best for him and Kat to be on vacation. This is my problem. But last week in his absence, I scheduled too much. And by the time Sunday came along, I paid the consequence there. And just thinking about it in hindsight, and even as I was talking to people on Sunday, it's like, that's a week I don't want to live again. And what did I do? I filled some of the times that usually exist as a little more unstructured and there's freedom. And maybe I'll think up a new thought there. Maybe I'll talk with God there. Maybe sermon inspiration might strike on Tuesday morning, but it might be on Tuesday afternoon. You know, who knows? Those times all got filled in Chris's absence. And again, I'm the one that did it. If I'm thinking, you know, for other folks or building that margin in, it's like, I think the baseline for what our commitments look like or what our weeks look like, the baseline of busyness has to decrease. Mm-hmm. And now there could be those pockets or spaces for whether it's a surprise time with Jesus or a moment to reflect, or gosh, someone came to mind that I haven't talked to in 5 years from an old church, but I should call them. And I actually have the space to do it. That again, I would say are probably prompts from the Spirit, but I'm not sure that it's like, oh, you can carve out a segment on a particular afternoon as much as it would be. The whole thing needs to thin out. And then you'll be surprised what fills in those empty spaces. And I think it'll be better. I don't think you'll regret having a thinner schedule, but it probably is this broader disposition of realizing there's stuff I'm doing I don't need to do. There's better life on the other side of doing less and letting folks try that. I don't know. Anything come to mind for you? I mean, is that even possible? Here's what I don't know. Baltimore, all I've ever heard is that there's such busy people there with high power jobs close to our nation's capital. Like, does that play well, or does that sound pie in the sky for Baltimore, man?
No, it's
Cincinnati,
not
we're just chill.
No, I was working on a message today. And I really kind of dove into this writing hole about the spiritual practice of saying no. And in order to, I think when Jesus talks about keeping your vows, the place I went to in my head as I was working on it was, we are operating at a level of like human flourishing that is completely foreign to any other time in human history. And we are operating at a burden and a pace that is actually impossible to do without technology now. Technology is accelerating the demands on our life. And so, you know, it got me thinking about like the Christian walk in our hurried, manic, control obsessed life right now is actually probably going to require that we say no to more things than ever. Because when we don't say no, we actually start living a life that Jesus says don't when it comes to vows, where our yes is no longer yes, which is why there's this heightened or increase in flaky people, you know, people who are genuine at heart are flaky at times, and they don't intend to be, but it's because like we just feel like we have to say yes to everything. And I think you're absolutely right. There are I think the flaw for people, like 49% of our area has a master's degree or higher, which is the third most educated part of the country. It's New York, DC, and then the Baltimore, Maryland, DC area. It's number three. And I think your job is your job. If you're a lawyer, you're going to be working a lot. You know that. But then what happens is people will then fill the downtime apart from the job. And I think that's what really kills us is I'm a slave to my son's baseball schedule. And I'm not thinking cognitively about the ramifications of that decision on the spiritual climate of the household I'm leading and stuff like that. And so I think it's feasible. It's just more difficult and it's not modeled well. So there's that fantasy when someone from our part of the country travels to like New Orleans and everything's free and casual and hey, it's in the bayou. And it's like, man, I could live here. But the thing is, if you lived there, you would take the same lifestyle. You're just in a new place. So I think it's possible. I know for me, I hate leaders. No, I don't hate leaders. I hate it when leaders constantly emphasize busyness as a source of value. And say, oh, I'm just so busy. And it's almost like college again, where you're trying to compete with each other about who has the worst test or finals, you know, coming up. And something that I've tried to adopt in my life, and some of the people listening to this, I've heard me say this, but when people are like, hey, John, I know you're really busy, but I'd love to get with you. I kind of correct them and say, I'm not busy. I'm selective. And it's like, I almost want to like train people to view their life that way, that busyness is not the goal. Intentionality and selectiveness can be the goal. But I go through seasons though, man, where I'm really good at having real margin. And then I try to like schedule my margin and it goes poorly, you know, because my best ideas for sermons are when I'm listening to another preacher or when I'm in the bathroom or when I'm, you know, disciplining my child. And I'm like, wow, this idea that I had is terrible. I need to change that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think though I'm a huge, huge critic of cell phones. And I think if we could just get that in order, there would be significant spiritual growth in our congregations. If we could help people realize like that we are being rewired into what human flourishing looks like and what it means to be human. And we're sort of like, we need to reclaim what that means because the phone is just creeping into every aspect of life. I think I have a dumb phone that I will use on Sabbath days or even over weekends. And it's a nuisance, bro. Like it is a pain to use.
Yeah.
But I think, man, if we could get our people to have a healthy relationship with technology and realize that's an actual point of discipleship, I think it would help people.
Yeah.
And I haven't thought about it this intentionally till now. I'm a verbal processor, unfortunately. So I'm taking up your time, but
no, it's making me think too, that just in terms of people's, you know, do sometimes we fill our calendars because we don't really know what we like or what will replenish us? Because if I'm thinking the self-knowledge point, it's like, when you're talking about people getting invitations, folks are like, come rock climbing with me. Yeah. And again, I'm not saying I'm the most self-aware person in the world, but I'm self-aware enough to know like, you know, rock climbing will do nothing for me. And there's a world in which, sure, I could squeeze it in. And yet, you know, why? And I think that's even, you know, to the deeper point, I mean, that's almost a silly example, but more deeply, it's like, yeah, what is it about the baseball games? And what is that doing for you or for your kid? And what is it about? And it's not saying no to baseball. Some folks, it's like, yes. I know they love that. But yes. It's like, if we would be more thoughtful to your point about like, why am I doing this really? And what is this bringing to me? And is this restful? Is this the kind of thing I love or really need? Or is this the one that can go? Which again, I think that kind of self-reflection to your point is the stuff we don't do because we're so locked in time and we're moving too quickly and we're glued to our phones from the first minute we wake up. But I just wonder how much more margin could be built if people were more aware of this is actually really filling. This is actually really meaningful. This is something I should keep doing because it makes a big difference and this is a great service thing. And then everything else can go away, you know?
Yeah, because if you're filling it with what you actually love, like Kim Scott is a leadership guru from Google and Apple, but she says, if it doesn't make you say hell yes, you have to say no.
Yeah. And
we don't live our life like that, but we should, you know, like if this invitation or this opportunity doesn't make me say hell yes with the stated values I have for my life, and you got to do the work to figure out what are your stated values. But if it doesn't make you say that, have the courage to tell the person, I care about you, but I don't care about this thing. And I'm trusting you to trust me that I care about you, but I don't want to go to rock climbing. And then you do the thing that you do love. It's actually part of that, like depositing Sabbath, even a little bit in your life. Like there's that, the monastic practices or rule of life that monks used to have to maintain rhythms. One of them is called like focal practices for people who are kind of new to this. And sometimes a focal practice is a way to be centered on like your fully present self while doing something you enjoy that makes it so you can kind of forget about the world. And so some recommendations are like people do fishing, they do carpentry, you know, painting. For me, like it sounds lame, but it's golf. Like I do not think about anything else other than my body, my kinetic energy, the weather, the earth. You know, I'm not overly critical anymore. And when I play, like, I just have fun. But if you don't have a practice where you forget your burdens and even your primary identifiers, and you can just, like, enjoy it, if you don't have that, I think that's a deeply spiritual thing, to find a hobby that does that for you. And some people, it's like hunting, like duck hunting, because you have to lay in a boat and you're just, like, one with the world. Our groups director loves duck hunting. I'm like, I don't understand you, but good for you.
Yeah.
So I think, to your point, you know, most people's hobbies are kind of like, well, what are your shows? And they list all these TV shows, or, you know, it's the other people's hobbies, or sometimes it's, you know, things that are numbing, but not restoring, you know?
Yeah.
Like, soul restorative practices is the phrase I've tried to have in my mind of, like, okay, reading a book. Okay, here's the thing. Things I don't want to do at first, I always feel good after. And things I want to do at first, I always feel bad at the end.
Yeah.
So I don't really, like, I'm not wired to really want to pick up a good book. I am now, but, like, back in the day, I'm like, I don't really want to sit down and read. I want to watch Netflix. But at the end of reading, there's so much, like, serotonin and pride and connection.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I want to just watch YouTube. But at the end, I'm like, man, I just wasted 48 minutes watching Office bloopers. And, like, I didn't do anything for my life. And it's like that with food. You know, I want this right now, but I feel bad later. Or, okay, I don't really want to eat this, but then at the end you feel great. So there's just some stuff there.
Yeah.
All right. So we're coming up on, you know, my agreed upon time with you. So Tyler, lastly, what is your heart for people trying to lean into these things, these ancient practices of Jesus that maybe they don't know how to do it? If you were just sitting in a room with people who are genuinely trying, but they've been conditioned over the last two decades to just live a hurried manic life, what's your heart for them? Like, what would you say to them? And then how could they pray for you in City Church OTR?
I think my heart, if I'm thinking about what I really want folks to experience, is what I also think Jesus wants folks to experience, but it's that invitation in Matthew, like, come to me, all those who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Yeah. And I just do think folks are tired, and folks are burnout, and folks are weary from doing other people's hobbies, as you said. I mean, that's a phrase that'll stick out. Weary from the pace that we live. And I do believe Jesus's invitation is an invitation towards deep soul rest. And yes, it's an invitation to pick up your cross. And how do you come to a yoke that brings rest and serve others can be another conversation for another day. Yeah. But I think the heart is there and Jesus knows, and Jesus lived it. I mean, talk about the most whole and healthy and complete and rested and connected with the Heavenly Father existence that ever lived. And of course, outward motivated and caring for others and healing. And he's got a good posse of friends, and they seem to have dinner together a lot. And I think they laughed because children don't run to people that aren't laughing. And it says the kids wanted to come to him. So however that worked, like, here's someone who knew how to live as a human. And he says, come follow me, and it's going to be restful. And your soul will be glad that you did. And you will, I mean, literally, he sets up the opposing views as, like, you can be tired and weary, or there's, like, a deep abiding sense of rest and contentment and peace. So if I've got a heart for anyone, like, why try this? Why do it? You know, I feel like I'm just taking some clumsy steps forward. It's like, keep going, friend, because I do believe Jesus comes through on his promises. I think your soul will find the rest that it wants. And it is a better way to live. Someone's already done it perfectly. And I think he's the most beautiful person that ever lived. Right. And so we have the invitation to be part of that. So that'd be my motivation there. It's like, we're all in this together. I mean, I love what you said early on too. For any of these answers, it should probably all be prefaced by, on my best days. And then there's the other days. Right. And so it just, I mean, yeah, for folks to remember that, it's like, gosh, it is not perfectly, but increasingly, it's not, I've nailed it, but, like, it's, you know, it's the trajectory that I'm on. And so that's the invitation. Then in terms of prayer, I mean, our church is a church that's planted in a pandemic, just keeps surprising me. I think some things that would be great is, how do we stay healthy as we grow? is a big question that we're asking. So launching in a pandemic forced some slowness that is you and I are talking. It's like, man, intellectually, I would love this slowness. If we would have planned and not in a pandemic, we would have powered right through this. And so it's like, okay, there's ways that we had to lean into some slower, more intentional rhythms. Now that there's the possibility to do things differently, how do we continue to have a healthy, deliberate culture where something like, you know, broader pandemic restrictions aren't the governor of that, but more just our convictions around how fast we should move or not move? I mean, that's a huge question in our community. Even for me personally, I can resonate when you're talking about finding that soul restorative hobby. I think I have soul restorative micro hobbies, but another guest preacher we had here was even asking, what is it that you do for you? You know, is his way of saying it. And it's like, what is my hobby? I don't golf. I just certainly don't rock climb. So like I'm thinking through some of those pieces, but trying to live into that a little more. I mean, that would be a great prayer. Yeah. And then just also more broadly, for kind of who is a crew here in Cincinnati, I feel like I've been thinking a lot about, okay, I've got some good friends, church is coming along, but like the people you're really, really doing life with and some of those rhythms feel like they're still settling in for me. So yeah, a summary of those prayer requests, it's both that our church would be healthy, that I could find a good abiding hobby, and also figure out like, what's this close crew? Again, something I thoroughly enjoyed in Kansas City. And to be clear, there are great friends here in Cincinnati. It's more just like, how does this all, you know, how does this click and what's happening? So anyway, that's stuff that comes to mind.
Okay. So if you want to pray for Tyler, pray for those things. And we're also going to pray with specific intention that God reveal to him, what is the thing that he can do that's so fun he forgets he's a minister. He forgets the burdens of ministry. Having fun, joy, restoration, because God delights in that. Let's pray for that for him.